will come to order. It is now 1:08 p.m. on Thursday, March 24th, 2016, and I'm going to take the liberty as the chair to wish my daughter a happy birthday on March 24th on the public record. She's 28 years old today, and I'm very, very proud of her. She's about to graduate from medical school and all kinds of exciting things. So, happy birthday, Emily. Okay, members present here in House Transportation are Representative Klayman, Representative Ortiz, Representative Stutz, and myself, Representative Hughes. Once again today, I'd very much like to thank our Records House staff, Summers Cole, and our LIO moderator, Christy Perrin, who's back there, yes. And today we are going to hear two items, HB 186, which is the off-highway driver's license. It's its first hearing, and then when we finish that up, we will go on to bills previously heard and scheduled, and that will be HB 230, the Arctic Man Way. So I'd like to start at, oh, there you are. I'd like to invite Representative Christ Tompkins and his staff, if you like, to present HB 186. And please introduce yourself for the record, and you know what to do.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Jonathan Christ Tompkins. I represent rural Southeast Alaska. House Bill 186 is a piece of legislation that relates to off-highway restricted driver's licenses. And actually wasn't entirely familiar with what these are, but well over 1,000 exist and are held by Alaskans right now in rural Alaska in off-highway communities. So communities from Shishmaref to Kakpovik to, let's see, Akiak to, I'm just trying to pick communities that I think these the four of you may have some connections with. There are a couple of these communities in my district, as well as Representative Stutz's district, as well as Representative Ortiz's district. And we want to fix a problem. So the problem is there's a certain class of communities that are sort of unfortunately made ineligible, and I think really contrary to the spirit of off-highway driver's licenses, by present regulation and statute. And so House Bill 186 makes amendments to statute to make these off-highway communities that are, in fact, literally off-highway communities eligible for off-highway driver's licenses. And there are really two criteria that we want to speak to. Right now, communities that are eligible for off-highway driver's licenses, there's sort of two problematic criteria. One is if those communities are connected to the ferry system, they're considered on-highway communities for the purposes of off-highway driver's license eligibility. So a community that, like Saldovia, for instance, in Representative Stutz's district, or the community of Huna, for instance, in my district, and we have someone in the audience actually from Huna who will be testifying, who's spending this week in Representative Wilson's office interning, are presently ineligible for off-highway driver's licenses, despite being pretty darn clearly not connected to the state highway system as we know it. The second problematic criterion that we seek to address is that presently any community with a traffic count greater than 499 is ineligible for off-highway driver's licenses. And so there are many this is a little more complex. There are many communities in Alaska that indubitably have traffic counts well above 499 and are presently eligible for these off-highway restricted driver's licenses. Communities like Cooper Bay or Sandpoint or, really any community with more than 400, 500 people, depending on the layout of the community, quite possibly has a traffic count more than 499 every day. And so the concern here is, if a traffic count were ever to be conducted in these communities, those communities would then be rendered ineligible for off-highway driver's licenses. So far, DOT has not conducted a lot of traffic counts, and that, as I understand it, basically involves, laying that little strip across the road, and there's like a little box, and it counts how many times it gets driven over. DOT hasn't conducted a lot of those in rural Alaska. I don't think really plans to, but nonetheless, that sort of potential is concerning. And the places where those traffic counts have been conducted have been primarily in ferry-connected communities. Specifically, if this bill is passed, there are four communities in particular that would be made eligible for off-highway driver's licenses. all four of these communities are in fact rural off-highway communities. They are the communities of Cake, Angoon, Puna, and Saldovia, all of which are ferry-connected communities. And then it would also remove the potential of communities like Hooper Bay, for instance, from being made ineligible for off-highway driver's license if a traffic count were ever conducted in, say, a place like Hooper Bay. So that's what the bill does. We're at your disposal, and we can do a sectional analysis paired on my staff or field questions, but wanted to sort of present an overview, and I hope that helps the committee.
Are there questions for the sponsor?
I've got a couple of
Representative
questions.
Representative Klingman.
I'm just, when you rattled off Hooney, Cake, Saldovia, and Angoon, I quickly went through this list that's printed down in the packet. And I take it these are the communities that are currently eligible for off-highway driver's licenses. And so what essentially this bill does is expand the number of communities that would be eligible to have the off-highway driver's licenses in part.
Through the chair, Representative Klingman, that's correct.
Okay. And how does it...
Follow up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. How does it change the actual application process? Because it's clear that there's some way to get some today. Does this change the way you go about getting an off-highway license?
Representative Klingman, through the chair, no, and Barrett can correct me if I'm misstating anything, but it clarifies which communities are eligible. So if you're an individual or if you're a private person, it doesn't change how you actually get the off-highway license. Although if you live in a community that's presently ineligible, you're not allowed to get an off-highway license.
So for example, if I were in Angoon, even though it's a small community, I couldn't apply for an off-highway license, whereas if I was in Sandpoint, I could today.
That is correct, Representative Klingman, through the chair. And I'm cautious in making this note, but I'm going to do it. There are ferry system connected communities, and I can't speak to this seeming incongruency, that are eligible for off-highway licenses, and you just mentioned one, which does get ferry service, whereas there are others that are ferry system connected also that are not eligible, and that may be a question for DMV, but just because of the example you mentioned, I just feel maybe... You picked an interesting community.
And I might say that it might have to do with infrequency of the ferry access, perhaps. I have...
After one follow-up.
Okay, go ahead.
I raised two communities, so I'm curious. Is the interesting community Sandpoint, the interesting community, and Goon both have ferry service, or is it really both that I'm asking about?
Right now, Sandpoint is an off-highway eligible community, and Goon is not eligible for off-highway driving
right.
licenses.
But follow-up, I believe they both have ferry service.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Klingman, through the chair, that is correct.
Okay.
Right, and that ties in my comment with Sandpoint, which is not as frequent as Angoon's, as I understand it. I have a question because how many DMVs are there in Southeast? Because I was surprised if this change were being made, it wouldn't apply to more than four communities in Southeast. Are there actually DMVs in all the other communities? Or why aren't there more than four that would become eligible?
I might... Call on Barrett to speak at that point.
I guess, good afternoon. My name is Barrett Wilbur, for the record.
And the affiliation?
And I am the staffer for Representative Chris Tompkins. To answer your question, Madam Chair, for the larger communities in Southeast, many of them do have DMVs. Sitka, Petersburg, Michigan, I believe Wrangell also has a DMV. There are smaller communities. The Prince of Wales also has a DMV, and all of the small communities on the Prince of Wales Island have driving access to that larger DMV. So many of the Southeast communities who actually have DMV access, Puna and Goon and Cape specifically, have been excluded from this list and do not have DMVs. But I would be happy to double check the list of Southeast communities that that maybe would become eligible under this bill.
If I may compliment Barrett's answer, there, I mean, there are certainly a number of small Southeast communities that would be made eligible but don't really have roads in the community. They're boardwalk communities, so I'm thinking of Port Alexander, Tenekee Springs, Pelican, where the whole notion of driver's license is kind of irrelevant anyway.
Thank you. And as follow up, because I'm looking at the list of the community, I see Gus Davis. I'm just wondering, are there any other ones on that, kind of like Sandpoint, even though it has an occasional ferry, is on the list? Are there any other Southeast communities that are on here that aren't boardwalk communities?
On the list that you're looking at, Madam Chair?
Yes.
No. So I'm not sure I'm looking at the list that you're looking at. I might be looking at...
I'm looking at the one, current communities exempt from registration and insurance, eligible for off-highway restricted driver licenses.
Oh, other Southeast communities that are presently ineligible that would be made eligible?
No, I just happened to glance down. And I see Gus Davis on this list already, and I don't know if there are any other Southeast, and maybe Representative Ortiz might see one that's on there, that for some odd reason got on the list, even though they have ferry system. It's because I'm surprised that this would only impact four, because part of the criteria is if it has a DMV or not. And so I figure Sitka has a DMV. You know, but what other communities? I guess I would ask for a list of where the DMV offices are in Southeast. That would be helpful information to have.
Yeah, Madam Chair, you actually highlighted Gus Davis is the one that I'm immediately aware of. And I think part of the reason perhaps Gus Davis is off-highway eligible, even though they get fairly regular ferry service, is that for years Gus Davis did not have state ferry service. Oh. That was a recent addition, and so... It may just be sort of a vestige or momentum and inertia that I don't want to speculate.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you're right. Does anyone else have any other questions? I have a couple more, but I don't want to dominate here if someone has something else. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Christ-Tompkins, if we were to enact this this particular measure, would it bring... I don't see any fiscal note attached to it. Would it bring any more significant financial responsibilities to the Department of Transportation? Would they have added costs involved with something like this?
Representative Ortiz, through the chair, no. It just clarifies which communities are eligible.
Okay. Got it.
Okay. Well, my questions are, do we have any... information about the number of paved road miles in these communities and how that might compare to communities that are already on the list and the speed limits. And I'm thinking about the public safety factor, and if a 16-year-old takes the written and then all of a sudden is behind the wheel and is able to go from point A to point B, if it's unpaved or it's a short distance, you know, probably... I raised teenagers, so I know what they kind of like to get the sense of the vehicle. And so I'm just wondering, are any of these communities where there's enough miles and paved roads where they actually could get up to dangerous speeds?
Madam Chair, I've been to all four communities that we've spoken about. It's an interesting classification, especially because we're talking communities that are coastal. I believe all have blocking road connections, and I know there's road miles in Saldovia. I've walked them myself. I don't know if those are from logging or different origin, but there's a few miles of road there. There's a few miles of road, and more than a few in Cake. and Huna. Angoon is pretty constrained because of the national monument. I think there are presently off-highway eligible communities that, I don't know how the exact number of road miles compares, but have significant road miles. And thinking in particular, there's a community on the Yukon, maybe Ruby, comes to mind. I might be a couple of villages off either direction, up river, down river, that has a road connection to a neighboring community. And so there's, you know, some road miles involved there. But it's a good question. I don't know the exact miles, relatively speaking.
Would you say that you don't think we're adding communities that have a great number more miles and might put the communities at risk as far as safety? In other words, is pretty comparable to maybe some that are already on the list and they've already been operating under this and it hasn't caused a safety problem in their communities?
Well maybe a couple thoughts, Madam Chair, worth sharing. I mean, the first is, actually, I know Angoon and Cake and maybe Huna at one point were off-highway eligible and had been for a long time, and regulations changed and they were made ineligible, which is partly the source of consternation for a lot of people in these communities. And we can sort of dig into that more specifically, and again, Barrett can correct me if I'm misspeaking, but a lot of people, you know, for years and years and years, they had off-highway licenses that they could get, and then things changed, and, you know, people have been a little grumpy about that since. So one is that actually, that what we're changing used to be the status quo. We're reverting to the status quo in a certain sense. The second thought is that, you know, I think that's probably a consideration that communities have taken into account, and there's broad going on universal support, at least in the three Southeast communities that I'm more familiar with, for this change. So I suspect those communities have maybe done that cost-benefit and thought about it, and I suspect maybe part of the reason they've come down positively on the change is that right now there's a fair number of people that are just driving without a license because the some of the logistics involved of being ineligible for these types of licenses and having to take a big trip into Juneau just to take a driver's test and a lot of expense. And I mean, some people are just not bothering with it, and especially, you know, whether they're elders or others. And so the alternative is just maybe not very desirable. Just a couple of us, and then Barrett has another.
Madam Chair, my name is Barrett Wilbur. I'm staff rep, Christ Tompkins. Just to give a kind of precise answer to your question, I've double-checked the functional update classification for the communities that we have, the four communities that would be added to the list. And the functional update classification, which sounds kind of like gibberish, is actually DOT's semi-annual, I think, study that they do. They go through every road, drivable road in the state, and assign it a classification, including things like rural interstate, minor collector road, rural local road, urban interstate, and kind of all along the spectrum. And the communities that we are proposing to add to the list with this bill have the exact same functional classifications for their road systems as towns that are currently eligible for off-highway driver's licenses under the system that exists right now. So I don't believe that there is a large difference in kind of road quality or safety from these communities to other eligible communities.
Thank you. That was very helpful. I have a question, because you mentioned that at one time, this is going back to the way it was. Why was it changed? When was it changed? And if it was changed just through regulation, why could this be fixed just through regulation?
Madam Chair, I'm inevitably going to defer to Barrett on this. I had a couple conversations with city administrators who sort of outlined it to me, and I believe, but I don't want to speak for Barrett, that she knows the details for the answers to most of those questions.
Madam Chair, I might have to defer back to Jonathan after I speak to this. These are questions that I, too, have asked the DMV and the department, and I've had a difficult time finding concrete answers. By researching the the amendments in statute that refer to off-highway driver's licenses. I know that the system has been in place since, I believe, the early 80s, and anecdotal evidence from communities that used to qualify for off-highway driver's licenses, such as Ingoon, who they've been off the list for about 10 years now. But anecdotal evidence from them suggests also that the system has been in place since at least the early 80s. No one at the DMV has been able to tell me precisely when the off-highway license system started. I'm not sure why that is. Actually, it's a question that I would like to know the answer to, and one that I've asked. I think I'm going to hand it over to Jonathan with that. If he's spoken to the mayors about it, he might be able to give you more context.
Could you repeat those questions?
Well, actually, I'd like to know the year, because the communities were on the list. So what year did they get moved off? And anything that you, any reason that you know of why they were pulled off? That's what I wanted to know. And then it sounds like it was done by regulation, not by statute. And so could this be done by regulation, which I would assume maybe it could be, and why you didn't pursue that and are doing it in bill form, I guess I'll add to it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've asked the DMV to try to find the histories of communities that have been moved off the list. For instance, Kotzebue, Ingoon used to be communities that were eligible for off-highway licenses and no longer are. And the department told me that they do not keep records of communities that have been moved off the list. So in terms of herd data, basically their memories are the only things, and the memories of people who have lived in those communities. Reasons that towns have been taken off the list include if a DMV was established in the community, which I believe is the reason that Kotzebue was taken off, or if a traffic count was done in that community, and the traffic count, any road in that community had above 499 for a traffic count, which is a requirement written into statute, then that community would be ineligible. And so we didn't pursue this change through regulation because the 499 traffic count requirement is written into statute. It's borrowed from insurance and registration exemptions that I think the department just borrowed it as kind of a handy qualification. And so those are reasons why a community could be taken off the list and why we wanted to pursue the problem through statute instead of through regulation.
Okay, thank you. And then I think I heard you say something about 10 years ago. So is it, I assume it was around 2005 that these were pulled off?
What I was referencing when I said 10 years, Madam Chair, was in my conversation with an employee at the DMV, she said to the best of her memory, it has been at least 10 years since Ingoon was removed from the off-highway eligible community list.
I don't know why I'm the only one coming up with things. I'm just a very curious person. I am wondering if this is going to impact insurance rates for drivers.
Madam Chair, so the off-highway eligible communities are currently exempt from insurance and registration. This won't change. I don't have any reason to believe that this would change insurance rates, since it's a small tweak to a system that already exists successfully. If you were to ask the question of what would happen if all off-highway communities were no longer eligible for insurance, no longer exempt from insurance or registration, that potentially could result in a change. But this particular bill adds four communities to a list of 295 communities of similar kind of quality in terms of driving insurance and registration. And so I don't believe there would be a fundamental change to insurance or registration rates.
Representative Clayman?
Madam Chair. Nothing like being in the legislature and discover interesting features about how parts of our law work in the state. You're saying that if I live in Goon, no, not in Goon, I live in Sandpoint and I have a pickup truck, I don't need to have insurance, and if I'm driving down the street and I hit my neighbor's car, or God forbid hit my neighbor when the neighbor is not in the car, then my neighbor could bring a remedy against me to whatever I had, but they couldn't go against my insurance company because it's not required, whereas if the same thing happens in Anchorage, I'm supposed to have insurance. Is you're telling me that's the story in Sandpoint, for example?
Representative Klayman, through the chair, while it's true that off-highway driver's license eligible communities, those drivers in those communities who have off-highway eligible licenses are not required to have insurance or registration on their vehicles by the state of Alaska. Many do anyway. I think many people, even in rural places, find that insurance, vehicle insurance, is very helpful and provides a safety net that they like. So if you got into a car crash in Sandpoint tomorrow, I cannot tell you specifically what damages you would be required to pay, depending on if you hit your neighbor's car or your neighbor, because honestly, I think there's a good chance they would have insurance, but it's true that by statute, they are not required to.
But those minimum insurance requirements that, for example, if I didn't have insurance in Anchorage, I could get ticketed for lack of insurance. In Sandpoint, I wouldn't get ticketed.
Representative Klayman, through the chair. That's correct.
Which brings up another question that I have about tickets. Are people in these communities getting tickets because they're it is expensive and time-consuming and a pain to, you know, get a vehicle on the ferry and come into the DMV in Juneau? So are people getting tickets? And as far as for the insurance, too, because if you're not a licensed driver, and you don't, then you can't have insurance, and there's at this point required to have insurance, are people getting tickets for that as well?
Madam Chair, I asked that question of the Department of Public Safety, and the answer is yes, people are getting tickets. So between 2012 and 2015, a period of 4 years, there were a total of 10 charges filed. And I'm actually, I think this is inclusive to municipal police departments, and three of these four communities have municipal. It's Saldovia, Cake, and Hoonah all have municipal PD. Although I'm actually not sure that that's true, what the Department of Public Safety said is true, because I don't think Cake does have a municipal police department, but we'll leave that. Anyway, I'm just reading what's in front of me. People are getting cited and ticketed, not with overwhelming frequency, and I think just my suspicion is there's this kind of a look away kind of situation going on, and you know, everyone is kind of on the same page. There's a few tickets happening.
Okay, thank you. Do you have a question?
No.
Okay, are there any other questions? It's been very informative hearing and presentation, so I appreciate that. And do have some people. Oh, we have someone to testify, so thank you very much. And I'm looking, we do have off-net, just in case anyone has questions, and I apologize for not bringing this up earlier, but from DMV we have Amy Erickson and Audrey O'Brien, in case members have any questions. And here in the room we'll open public testimony, and I have Manny Budke from Hoonah, if you'd like to come up and testify. State your name for the record and your affiliation and proceed with your testimony. Welcome.
Thank you, Representative. My name is Manny. I'm from Hoonah. My name is Manny Butchie. I am from Hoonah. I am representing myself. I'm just talking as an individual. I'm from Hoonah, obviously. I have my license right now. But to get my license, I went through a lot, okay? So in Hoonah, we have to plan it out perfectly so we can get our car, to Juneau. We have to plan it out so we can look on the DMV schedule and have it right on time with their schedule for taking driver's tests. Not a written test, but an actual driver's test. That's very hard to schedule. I got my permit in 2014. I was not able to even get my license until 2015. I was 14 when I got my permit, and I couldn't get my license until I was 16, of course. So I had my permit for a long time. But when I turned 16, my plan was to get my license in October. But, of course, I couldn't do that because you look on the schedule. When I looked on DMV schedule, it was ridiculous. I had to wait till next month. But that didn't work in next month because my mom and dad might not be able to make it over there. And they have to sign it. And one of my parents needs to be there with me. Okay, and then we couldn't get our car over there. So it took us quite a long time to get my license. And eventually we did, and I do have insurance. My parents do that. But I'm very happy that this bill is being introduced. This will make it easier for my friends, my sister, and other kids in these other communities that I know to get their licenses. So thank you, Representative Christ Thompson, for bringing this up.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions of Manny? Well, thank you very much for your testimony. It really makes the case. And because we have Amy Erickson online with DMV, Amy, I have a question for you. We were talking earlier about Sandpoint and Gustavus. They are on the eligible list under the current statute and regulations, I understand. Can you explain why they are, and when we thought maybe Gustavus was on from the years prior to ferry services, and it just got left on, and then a Sandpoint on there because they only have limited ferry service?
Madam Chair, for the record, this is Amy Erickson, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. I have Audrey O'Brien on the line also. She maintains the list and would better be able to speak to those communities.
Audrey, if you'd state your name and affiliation, and go ahead and answer the question, please.
Hello, my name is Audrey O'Brien with the Alaska DMV Office Manager. The record.
Did you hear the question, Audrey?
Yes, Madam Chair. I believe both communities are on the list. Sandpoint does not get frequent ferry service, and Gustavus has remained on the list. DMV is really cautious about removing communities from the list. Sandpoint, we don't have a traffic count for. Gustavus, we have an old traffic count from 2012. So it's been slow moving them off. Just be really cautious. It may be that a more recent traffic count would be justified.
Thank you. Representative Klayman, you have further question about those since you brought it up?
I don't have a question about that. I do have a question. I have a question for Ms. Erickson, but not for the traffic.
Okay, go ahead. Thank you, Audrey. Representative Klayman.
I find this a very interesting and useful bill because it really raises the topic about how do we determine the rural communities that should be appropriately treated as rural for things like driver's licenses and off-road driver's licenses. Where is the department and the administration on this bill? Supporting, not supporting, neutral? What's your perspective?
Through the Chair, Representative Klayman, in concept, DMV is supportive of the bill because we recognize the challenges that particularly rural Southeast residents face, but the mandatory insurance, the vehicle registration, and the off-highway licenses are inextricably linked, and I think there needs to be a conversation about public safety in discussing this change.
And then follow-up, I think the Chair was asking questions about approaching this as a regulatory matter as opposed to a statutory matter. Is Representative Christ Tompkins correct that trying to do this as a regulatory matter is problematic because of existing statute?
Madam Chair, Through the chair, Representative Clayman, that's correct. DMV's regulations relate to the off-highway restriction, but it's in statute for mandatory insurance and vehicle registration.
Thank you. So I don't see anyone else online for testimony. And is there anyone else in the room that'd like to testify? And I'll just point out, everyone knows him, but members, in case they have a question for DOT, Mike Lessman is here as well. Anyone have a question for Mr. Lessman? Okay. With that, I'm going to leave public testimony open, and we will hold the bill at this time. Thank you very much for presenting today. And with that, I will. We will get ready now. We'll take an at-ease and get ready for the next bill. The House Transportation Committee back to order, and now we're going to move to HB 230 under bills previously heard. And if naming Arctic Manway is the short title of the bill, if Representative Culver, the sponsor of the bill, would come forward. And while he's getting situated, I want to point out to the members that we have had a zero fiscal note prepared by the committee staff, and I would entertain a motion to adopt it.
Madam Chair, I move that the House Transportation Committee adopt the committee's zero fiscal note for House Bill 230, Version A, dated 3/24/2016.
And I will object for purposes of discussion. Representative Culver, would you like to explain?
Yeah, we have a private sector partner, Arctic Man, Inc., that's going to provide the funding for the sign, either in cash or materials, whatever works out, and this is, we've coordinated that with DOT. So on the advice of the finance chair, co-chair, this was the appropriate way to proceed and then get it into finance committee if we need any further cleanup.
Okay. Thank you. And can you tell us to getting the sign up, there's, you know, zero cost to the state. What about long term, and is this particular road a state road?
It's not a state maintained road. It's the old access road to the Isabel Pass pipeline camp, and it is maintained by the Arctic Man entity when they get ready to put on their event. Like, it'll be on April 7th, they plow the road in and open up parking pads where the old camp was for RV and tents and whatnot. So, no, there's not going to be an assumed maintenance responsibility for DOT, the sign or the road.
Okay, great. Thank you. Does anyone have any more questions for the sponsor regarding the zero fiscal note? Okay, I will remove my objections and so seeing and hearing none, the zero fiscal note's been adopted. And are there any questions of the committee in general on the bill itself for the sponsor? All right. Is there anyone, I don't see anyone online to testify. Is there anyone here in the room to testify? We left public testimony open, so I'll close public testimony at this time. And if there's no further discussion, I entertain a motion from the committee.
Madam Chair, thank you. I move that House Transportation move House Bill 230, Version 29-LS1135/A out of committee with individual recommendations and adopted zero fiscal note.
And hearing no objection, HB 230-29-LS1135/A moves from committee with the adopted zero fiscal note. And I want to remind members to stick around to sign off. And the meeting is adjourned at 1:51. Thank you, everyone.